Imagine being afraid of your child. Imagine counting down the days till they turn 18 so that they can leave the house so that the fear can go away. Today, we talk with a parent that went through this exact thing as we learn more about reactive attachment disorder. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. And today I am joined by the founder of Trauma Drama University, Gina Heumann. Hey, Gina, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So you've actually talked to your state's Congress about mental health. So talking to Congress versus talking to me, this is going to be easy for you today. I'll tell you. you should be totally fine. Now, before I've got a bunch of questions. I've gone through your website. I've listened to your TED talk. But first, before we get into that, I wanted you to share your story about why this became important for you.
Well, my life didn't turn out the way it was planned. I know a lot of us could say that, You know, I thought I'd be one of those Sex and the City girls and have like a high powered job and a bunch of shoes with the red bottoms on them. I still can't afford one pair. So none of that worked out. But I met my husband, knew that that canceled the plan. At first, we didn't want to have kids. But as we got closer to 30, it suddenly became more important to us. And we went through 4 years of infertility treatments, discovered that we were meant to adopt. And I really, truly feel that way. Like looking back on it, I don't know why it took me so long to get to that point, because I've always been freaked out by newborns. I never really wanted to breastfeed. And, you know, I've always said like, oh, if they could just hand me a 6-month-old baby, that would be awesome. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So like, we were meant to do this.
Right.
We just didn't know it at the time. So our first son came along. He was super easy. We were convinced that we knew this parenting stuff. We're pretty good at it. And then we decided to go back for a second one. Our second one was neglected by his foster mom. I can't prove it, but I have a lot of symptoms. And I had a really strong feeling when we met her. But being that he was only 6 months old, we thought, okay, well, 6 months old, you know, love conquers all, right? You know, we just loved him and give him some rules and he'll be fine. Had no idea how much trauma rewires the brain, especially in that first year of life, because your brain is growing quickly. So he became this child that like none of the parenting books worked on. You know, I would buy every parenting book on the shelf and all of them would work on my first kid and none of them would work on my second kid. And I'm like, okay, well, why do they write these books if they don't work on all kids? Apparently, you know, each car comes with a manual, but each kid does not.
Right.
So really it just spiraled into getting harder and harder and harder to parent him, because if you said no to him, it would often trigger this 0 to 60 anger response, you know, where like he went from being super happy to all of a sudden, you know, screaming at the top of his lungs. I mean, there's a huge difference between a rage from tantrum or from trauma and a regular tantrum or a meltdown. Rages are intense. And this is where he started like punching holes in the walls and throwing giant objects at us. So it really became challenging to parent. And, you know, from a very young age, I was fighting with my pediatrician. I'm like, you know, this is more than terrible twos. And she's like, oh, well, let's just wait and see. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I've already raised one kid who was easy. He didn't have any of this. So, and I know other moms with other kids and they don't deal with this. So I know this isn't normal, but she just really didn't get it. It took me almost a year just to get a referral to see a therapist or a psychiatrist.
Yeah, it's amazing how long those referrals take? And, you know, like, it, I mean, come on, you can get a referral for any physical condition, but for a mental condition, it just seems to take forever.
Exactly. I know. And, you know, she just wouldn't believe me. So when we finally did get in and see him, I can't even tell you there was a quick fix. I mean, they thought he had ADD. They looked at him for literally 5 minutes and they were like, oh, well, clearly he has ADD. Here's a prescription. Goodbye.
Right.
So, and you know, as much as I know, I've read a lot of comments online and people are like, oh, I would never give my kid drugs. Well, you know, when you're struggling like we were and you see a doctor that appears to know a lot, they have certificates hanging on the wall, right? And they say, here you go, here's what's going to help. You listen to them. So, you know, we tried and went through many medications, many different mental health diagnoses. It wasn't until he was 10. So now we're talking a decade that we finally got his proper diagnosis, which was reactive attachment disorder. And believe it or not, that came from an intern at our therapist's office. He was like still in school and I guess he was studying this and he said, hey, have you ever heard of reactive attachment disorder? And I said, no. And he said, well, let me send you some articles and let's see if, you know, if you think that's what's going on. And he sent me these articles. It was as if that, you know, person had been in our house.
They knew
exactly what we were dealing with. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is it. And then it said in the articles, you know, it stems from trauma. And, you know, I really always suspected he was neglected. There are signs of neglect. I didn't know what they were back then, but he would not give us eye contact. He wouldn't, you know, when babies are like in the playpen and you're running around doing vacuuming or whatever, they usually watch you. They follow you with their eyes. Ours didn't. He just kind of stared straight ahead. He didn't play with toys. He had to be like constantly entertained because when he was by himself, he just got frustrated. So, you know, those are some of the signs of neglect. He didn't like to be touched. You know, we'd try to snuggle with him and he'd arch his back and try to wiggle away from us. And those are all signs of neglect. So had I known that back then, maybe we could have shortened this process. But I'm kind of frustrated that we didn't get better training as adoptive parents.
Right.
So I'm kind of fighting for hoping that more adoptive and foster parents can get the proper training for this.
So reactive attachment disorder.
Yep.
So is that rare? I mean, because I, you know, that's something that, it, you know, and I've raised kids. I haven't heard of this either. So what exactly?
They say it's rare, but, you know, in the adoption and foster care area, childhood trauma is not rare. And reactive attachment disorder is like the worst form of childhood trauma. It's the point. In fact, if you listen to a lot of podcasts on the crime podcasts, they often bring up reactive attachment disorder now because it's the same disorder that Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber had, and the Parkland shooter, Nicholas Cruz, there's several other high-profile criminals that have been diagnosed with this. And basically, it comes with, it's a response to trauma. In that first year of life, their brain is rewired to be in fight or flight all the time. So, you know, instead of being able to reason with someone who's living in fight or flight, all they're thinking about is survival. And so there's no reasoning with these kids until you can calm the brain. So it was just crazy. Our son would throw these huge tantrums, sometimes 4 hours long. There was one particular tantrum rage, lasted 4 hours. Like, he had calmed down. I said, I bet you don't even remember what you're upset about. And then it started him all over again. So I never made that mistake again. Yeah.
Wow. What did you do as a parent when you've got a 4 hour tantrum happening?
You know, I would try to sit with him in time out. I'd try to, like one of my therapists said, give him a bear hug from behind. worked really well one time. Second time, he headbutted me in the nose and I had a nosebleed. Oh, so, you know, it's just, there really wasn't, you kind of have to put him in a safe place and just let him rage it out. The more you engage with them, the more the rage goes on. So that's something we learned over time. But, you know, it got to the point where one of the symptoms of reactive attachment disorder is that it's generally something that we don't see out of the home. When they go to school, they're very superficially charming. Everybody wants to be their best friend, or they want to be everybody's best friend. They'll come sit on your lap. They'll, you know, entertain you, and you'll be like, wow, this kid loves me. It's because they're reacting to attachment. So they're like shopping around for new parents, basically.
Oh, wow.
And the thing that they hate the most is attachment. So you kind of have to get over that piece before you can heal.
And so, I mean, that just seems trying to put myself into your shoes back then. I mean, that seems so difficult. You've got this child that you've adopted. You see them struggling and going through these things, and yet the being more attached or being like closer to them and trying to help actually
makes it worse.
Like that's,
yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, and as a parent, then you feel so lost, clueless. You feel like a failure because you're like, okay, well, everybody else is doing this. Their kids are fine. How come my kid's throwing a fit, you know?
Right.
So it was really, really hard.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing that you have to deal with is the other parents. Other parents saying, they're just bad parents. That's what's going on. Like, I mean, those judgy parents that are coming at you, you had that to deal with as well.
Oh, wow. Yes. I was at Target one time. My son was about 8, I think. And it was like back to school time. And we had to do all that shopping for the school supplies. It took us like an hour. And at the end, he wanted something. And I thought, oh, there's all these moms in the school aisle. I better say no, because, you know, I don't want to look like I'm a pushover and I'll just buy him whatever he wants. So I said no. And he started throwing this huge rage in the middle of Target. You know, I abandoned my cart. I'm trying to get him out, but he's not a baby. I can't pick him up anymore. He's 8. I have to like drag him out of the store. And as I'm going to the front of the store, this lady comes up to me wagging her finger at me. And she's like, you should be embarrassed. You know, I have raised 6 children and none of them ever acted like that in public. You know, you are failing as a parent. And of course I felt like I was failing as a parent. So I got in the car and I cried the whole way home. And I thought, I don't even know what to do. I'm failing.
Right.
And you know,
wow.
We just kept at it. We tried every therapy there was. We've tried in-home therapy, which is very weird. That's the one where like the super nanny comes to your house and like follows you around while you do stuff. It's very strange. And of course you're not yourself in that situation because you have a stranger watching you all the time.
Right.
That wasn't very helpful. We did family therapy. We did individual therapy. He did this group therapy as a little kid, you know, where they call it friendship groups, and they learned about anger management techniques. My kid, I'm telling you, in the right frame of mind, he was the leader of the group. He was like, oh, here's all the stuff you're supposed to do when you're angry. But when he was angry, he couldn't access any of those things because you're in fight or flight. You're not thinking logically.
Right. Right.
So
how is he now? And how old is he now?
He's doing great. He's going to be 18 next month. So we made it to adulthood. And I know we're going to make it because he's doing amazing.
So how did you get from, you know, you were talking about 10 years old and the problems there up to 18. Yes. What changed over the last 8 years that made that puberty, possible?
Yeah, puberty escalated things. When the puberty hormones started kicking in, oh my God, that's when things left the house and became in school, in public. The smallest things would trigger his anger. And so the school, there was one incident where he like grabbed a pair of scissors. He didn't threaten anybody, but the way he grabbed them, they thought it was threatening. They called this police officer. They shut down the room. They cleared everybody out. you know, and then as the kid who this is happening to, now all the other kids are bullying him and he really just can't control what's going on in his head. We were encouraged to find a different middle school. there was another incident that happened at school that sent him to the juvenile assessment center, which is in the back of a squad car. You know, it's actually at the prison, which is so freaky. I just watched a show where they had to, like, somebody went to visit their loved one in a prison, and they're doing the, like, search of everything, and they're taking everything out of your pockets. And I was like, oh my God, that just really brought back memories. That was so scary. I've never been in prison before, so.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, we walked past, like, there was a big window looking into the cafeteria with all these men in orange jumpsuits, and I was like, oh my God, this is scary. So that was honestly the scariest time of our life. I would say that was kind of our rock bottom. Mm-hmm. He got a ticket, we had to go to court, we had a year of probation, and he had to do community service, and he was 11. So, you know, it was frustrating. Wow. Because I thought, okay, he's 11, like, what is the rest of his life gonna look like? At that juvenile assessment center, they questioned him for about 6 hours. They wouldn't let me pick him up until they were done questioning him. And that's really scary too, because another trait of kids with reactive attachment disorder is that they're not always truthful. So we have no idea what he's saying about us to these people at the prison.
Right.
And I'm frightened that I'm going to lose my other kid too. You know, like, I might lose both of my kids today. Fortunately, he did not lie. He told the truth. He was kind of freaked out about being in prison. They came to the conclusion, same as us, that he had reactive attachment disorder. And one of their young interns happened to know somebody who was working for our eventual therapist. And she gave us his name. He's a world-renowned expert in reactive attachment disorder and childhood trauma. And we did this 2-week family intensive program that was so powerful. It was just amazing. We all did it together. It was like 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, all four of us with four therapists. So sometimes we were one-on-one, sometimes we were all together, sometimes we were doing activities together, sometimes it was just the parents while the kids were in another room doing like play therapy. So it was amazing. And I can't say at the end of that 2 weeks, like, ooh, a switch flipped and everything was better. But I will say that we didn't notice it right away. We thought, okay, there's another like $12,000 we wasted on, you know, something else that's not going to work. And slowly over time, his rages started to be further in between, fewer and further between. We didn't notice it because we live with it, but it was our families when we went home for the holidays that year, because the therapy happened like in the spring. So about, you know, 8 or 9 months later, we go home for the holidays and all the relatives were like, wow, he's so much calmer. He's so different. He's engaging with us. You know, like, they started seeing differences. And then after that, we started seeing differences too. And we got to a point at one point, we're like, when was the last time he had a rage? And we couldn't think of it. And that was like the happiest day ever. I was told you he was going to be 18 next month. I used to honestly have an app on my phone that would count down the hours until his 18th birthday. and honestly, yeah. Now I'm like, I don't want him to move out yet, because now we have a great relationship. Now he's healed. He's talking to us. Like, he's sharing things with us. He still doesn't like to be touched, you know, so he doesn't like to be hugged very much, but I do make him do a 20-second therapeutic hug sometimes. Like, mom needs a hug.
Therapeutic for you or for him?
Yeah, for me.
Yeah. It seemed like it was difficult for the diagnosis for your child. As a parent that's listening to this podcast, because they want to hear other stories and they want to probably try to identify, is this something that I am going through? What would you tell those parents that are listening to this podcast?
If this is what I would say, honestly, in my opinion, the official diagnosis doesn't really matter. If the child had trauma, and that can be any trauma in the first like 3 years of life, and that's, it's more common with adoption and foster care because there's usually a reason those kids have been removed from their situation. So there is usually abuse or neglect or something like that. Losing a parent is also a trauma. So losing a, just adoption in general could be seen as a trauma. Parents getting divorced at a young age, you know, where like suddenly dad's not around anymore or mom's not around anymore. Or if a parent's in a hospital and can't be with their kid for an extended period of time, all of those things are traumas to that growing brain. And so if your child had any kind of early life trauma and the parenting books aren't working, you need to try a different strategy. So, I have a new business, Trauma Drama University. I put together a free program. So my other job on the side, I'm a professor. So I was like, all right, I'm going to use my skills as a professor. And I created a series of online courses for parents raising kids with trauma to kind of teach about the trauma brain. My favorite one, though, is about mindset, because for me, it's real easy when you have a kid like this to fall into the trap of my kid's horrible, you know, and just thinking they're manipulative, they're awful. You know, you can't think that way about your child and still love them. So changing my mindset was a big piece. And I used to have a vision board on my wall that listed all the different things that trauma does to the brain. And I'd look at it every night before bed and say, okay, none of this he's doing on purpose. Like that helped me a lot when I got to understanding the trauma brain. So I have a class on mindset. I have a class on the trauma brain. I have one on treatments and therapies that have been shown to work for these kids. I don't recommend any of them because I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor, but these are some of the things we've tried and some of the things I've heard of since then that I'm like, ooh, I wish we could have tried that. Right. And then I have another course on PTSD in caregivers because I now suffer from that. So, right. If you're starting to get those symptoms, you know, you need to get help as quickly as possible. So, and it is hard to parent a kid when you're suffering trauma yourself.
Right.
So,
yeah. Yeah, it's great that you've put this together and it's great that it's all free. Now, it's free. However, there's a store on there if you want there to support this program. If this is something that you go and visit and check out, make sure you also check out the store as well. We'll put links to both of those. But yeah,
tell us about the store. I wanted to talk about that really quick because I was, when I first launched the business, I was trying to charge for this. And then, you know, I really wasn't getting anywhere. And I had this moment, I think I may have had COVID in November, and the headache, the COVID headache that's like so horrid, I don't know if you've heard about it, it came with like this lightning bolt moment for me that I was like, this needs to be free. Like we went probably $100,000 in debt trying to help our kid, you know, like trying every therapy that we could do. And I kept thinking to myself, okay, you know, my husband and I have pretty good jobs and we're this far in debt, you know, and I'm super educated and I love to research. There's a lot of parents out there that don't. So I thought, okay, how can I help these people and make it so that they don't have to go $100,000 in debt? So this is really just, I'm hoping this is like the starting point because we also have part of the program is a monthly Zoom session. So I've had one with a woman that advocates for education. She does IEPs and 504s. So she talked about how to do that in a meeting. I've had, I had a woman who does EFT tapping, teaches some calming techniques for the brain. So the idea is that I want to connect these parents to the people who can actually help them. So they don't have to pay for my service. They just, you know, can learn more about what's out there and then go see what they can try.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's going to be what a lot of it is, you know, like you said, like all the parent books, like they don't fix every situation. They don't know
right
everything.
And so I thought, free, it has to be free.
Yeah.
Well, then I thought, how am I going to do that? So I got a fourth job so that I could support running a business. You know, I'm like, okay, that's ridiculous, but that's what I was doing. And finally around Christmas, I was like, you know what? I'm a designer. Like, why don't I just design some stuff and make a store? And then it started snowballing and I started thinking big. So my goal now is I want to create a movement. So, you know, you wear pink for breast cancer. I want people to wear my trauma hearts to support childhood trauma. So you don't have to be a childhood or a parent of a kid with trauma to shop at my store. I have some really cool stuff in there that's inspirational that doesn't even say trauma on it. My word is believe. If you watch Ted Lasso, my word came first. Mine was on my bedroom wall before that, so I didn't copy off him.
You have it duct taped up there like he does.
Yeah. I actually had a really pretty wooden sign up.
Well, you're a designer, so you're going to have something really nice.
Yeah.
He's
so,
just a coach.
So yeah, and honestly, I had that sign up because believe was like, I believe that we can conquer this. I believe that we can get to the other side. And so I put that on a lot of my merchandise. But nice. I have inspirational gifts. I have like candles and, you know, some things that if you're a rad parent, it would be nice to sit in a bathtub with a candle and get some self-care in between rages.
Right.
Self-care is really important. So I have some self-care items and, you know, some gifts and all kinds of cool stuff.
Nice. Well, okay. So parting advice to the parents out there and what they're going through. I mean, they've spent, you know, there's money, there's time, there's effort, there's failed treatments, there's in and out of doctors and trying to get referrals and doing all of those things that you went through, but yet you've got the believe sign up. How do you get them to still like to motivate them to get through this and to keep believing?
So being a part of a supportive community, I think, is important. So part of Trauma Drama University, we have a private support board. So if you need to write what's going on in your house and like you wouldn't share that with your best friend, you can share it with other rad parents and we get it. So I think that's really helpful too in you know, finding out what else is out there, finding a support group, building a village. You know, when I finally started telling people what was going on, that my son had trauma and that all this parenting stuff wasn't working, it was very freeing and they started to understand a little better. So I think educating your village is really helpful as well. Right. And, you know, teaching people different trauma techniques, I think, is helpful. I don't know. I just say never give up, you know, just keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. And self-care, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Exactly. Yeah. Gina, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you. And thank you for rating this podcast and sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. And we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to check out Learning More next week. I heard about this thing called scientific hand analysis. Now, is it just a rebranded palm reading? I don't know. We're going to find out as we talk with somebody that is a master scientific hand analysis, as we learn more about that subject next week. It'll be interesting to learn more about that one. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, if you've got something that you would like to learn more about, just head over to our website, learningmorepodcast.com. You can see past episodes, past links. You can see it all right there. You can also submit your ideas and comments about the show. Also, you know what? You can do that right there on whatever platform you're listening to by leaving us a review. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.